The small African seaport of Barter sweltered in the hot tropical sun. The beehive-shaped homes and granaries of the native Senegalese showed hard and black in the little village's skyline, topped only by the white tower, the refuge of the Holy Mother, the village's little sanctuary, the only structural evidence of the culture of another world. To the two men sitting in the office of the Barter trading post, the white tower of the sanctuary shimmered and moved in heat waves, almost disappearing and then returning, moving out of focus and then back, tantalizing the eyes, almost like a mirage.
And so begins another story by The Player, America's most versatile actor, Mr. Paul Frees. But here, before we begin our story, is your announcer. Is your star, the player, Mr. Paul Frees.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is the player welcoming you to our presentation of Mirage. Two men sat in the trading post office looking out on the dirty brown village. Neither spoke for a moment. Then the little man with the sharp black eyes turned to his heavy-set companion.
Well, Graff, I assume you'd like to know the details of my proposition.
Yeah, I have always found it important.
Well, in my last trip to the interior, I discovered a new and valuable gold field near White Mountain.
I see. But what proof do you give?
Well, you've seen the assays.
Of course I have. But where do the essays come from? That is the detail which I must know.
Graf, you and I both know there isn't a property in the territory which could produce ore to assay like the sample showed you.
Providing what you say is so, what is it you want from me?
I want two things, Graf.
First,
I need money for the original development.
Original developments are expensive. What do you offer me?
I offer you 50% of the value of the holdings.
50%? This is not enough.
But look, Graf, I've worked and slaved and sweated for this claim. I've grown into an old man looking for it, an old man at 35. Come on, be reasonable.
Oh, I'm sorry, Becker. It must be 70% with no division of profits until my original investment in the property is back in my pocket.
Becker knew he was forced to accept the other man's terms, no matter what they were. He spoke slowly.
Okay, Graf. You got yourself an agreement.
And now that we have the first detail settled, what is the second, eh?
The second is that we must take possession of the property immediately.
But you said that you have already filed claims.
I have. But this mine's too valuable. To protect our interests, we shouldn't lose a day. We should take possession immediately. Once we begin development, we're safe.
I see. Well, then we must take the next boat to Cape Race. From there, the trip up the river will make it easy.
There won't be a boat for Cape Race in a month. We can't wait that long.
Well, then what do you suggest?
I suggest we leave here immediately.
But this is dangerous country between here and White Mountain. It is uncharted. It'd be more safer to wait and leave from Cape Race.
Yeah, safer for us, perhaps. But I'm afraid we can't afford to wait.
But what about a safari? Could it be arranged?
You know, that's an impossibility. The natives are superstitious about this country.
Superstitious? Huh? And why?
Mirage. Yeah, this is the land of mirages.
Oh, the natives are fools. Then it is you and me, Becker.
Yeah, Graf. You and me.
And I might add, you have chosen wisely for your partner, Becker. When you went up from Cape Race, that was simple. But going through from here, it is something else. The jungle here is unexplored. We have no landmarks to follow. The mirage makes it only that much more difficult. But with this, I will get us through to White Mountain.
Graf held up a fine bronze compass.
This will be our directional finder.
Yeah. When do we start?
We can get our packs and supplies ready today. We will start tomorrow.
The following morning, the two men took a last look at the mud houses and the dirty bay waters of Barter that topped the palisade at the edge of the jungle, and then they disappeared into the tall grass. The trip from Barter to the mountain was a dangerous one, not because of the terrain, but because of the mirages and the possibility of getting lost. But Becker knew that Graf would get them through. That was the important thing. The first day passed without eventuality. But on the second day out of Barter, the sun broke in blazing fury. And as the two men toiled along, tempers became shorter and shorter. At noon, they reached the muddy waters of a small stream and picked their way down slowly to where the bridgeway of rocks formed a natural crossing. They were halfway across when suddenly, without warning, Becker lost his footing and tumbled headlong into the brown water.
Help! Graf! Help!
You! Grab my hand! My hand, you fool! Ah, now you have done it. You lost one of the water bags. Dummkopf! You fool!
I'm sorry.
Sorry for being clumsy?
That water feels so cool.
Ah, you. Come on before you fall in again.
Graf led the way and the two men continued their march. It was late that afternoon when Becker began to lag behind. And when they camped that night, Graf could see the unmistakable signs of fever in the glazed eyes and trembling hands of his partner. Evidently, the tumble into the stream had done it. Graf cursed him silently for that and was glad that they only had one more day of the journey. The following morning, Becker rose pale and white, and the heavy man was forced to take most of his burden on his own shoulders. The little man stopped for frequent rest, and the delay added to Graf's anger. He began to regret the fact that he'd pulled Becker out of the stream. The day grew hotter and hotter, and the extra burden on his shoulders became heavier and heavier. Becker kept crying for water, and they had little enough to get them to White Mountain. And then suddenly they began to see the mirages, the ones which the natives feared so much. First, there was a herd of wild beasts, clear and distinct, covered only by the heat waves. Then the herd disappeared as if by some magic hand. Just after noon, Graf saw a lake, cool and glistening out of the wasteland. Becker cried out for the water he saw, and then moaned as it vanished. By this time, he was completely out of his head, raving. Slowly, a plan began to grow in the heavy man. Becker was delaying them. The one water bag was nearly empty. There was just enough to get strong men to White Mountain. Graf knew where the mine was. He could start the development alone. And the trip down the river to Cape Race could be an easy one. Wouldn't it be better to leave Becker? He reached slowly for the heavy caliber gun on his hip. And then Becker seemed to realize what the heavy man's plans were. And he was upon Graf before he could pull out the gun, a glistening hunting knife in his hand. The knife flashed in the sun as they met, and Becker drove it home with maniacal fury. But something in Graf's pocket deflected it, and the big man got a hand on the other's wrist. It was a strange sight, there in the jungle wasteland, two men fighting bitterly in a death struggle. Graf found the little man surprisingly strong, regardless of his illness. But soon he began to weaken. And with a crashing blow, Graf sent him sprawling into the sand. There was blood on the little man's mouth. He looked up at Graf, pitiful appeal in his eyes, which the other man didn't see. Graff freed the automatic from his holster.
Oh!
3 quick shots and it was over. Graff assembled the packs and then discovered with dismay that the ground under one of them was damp. One bullet from his gun had pierced the last water bag. A wave of apprehension came over him, but then he looked ahead at White Mountain and his fears quieted. There was water there. He could make it. He moistened his lips in the damp sand and then picked up his packs and started off. He headed down a small ravine which blotted the horizon from view, and when he reached the top, he suddenly stopped. Out there in front of him, the slopes of White Mountain shimmered and wavered and disappeared. He looked to the left of him, and there it was, the rocky outline, but only for a moment. And then it was gone. He turned around, and it was behind him, quickly appearing, only to vanish as quickly. And suddenly, the fear of the natives gripped him. Mirage. Mirage. His hot lips spoke the word, and his whole body trembled. Mirage. But then he knew he mustn't lose his head. They had been in the jungle 3 days. White Mountain was near. It must be near. Only a few hours away at the most. And all he needed was the direction. He reached quickly into his breast pocket to pull out the compass. He looked at it slowly, comprehendingly. It was torn and twisted and bent. The needle limply dropped on the sand. There it was. The compass which had repelled Becker's knife thrust and saved his life.
And so ends another story by The Player, starring your one-man theater, Paul Frees, who portrays all of the parts. Mr. Frees will return in just a moment after a few words from your announcer.
Was written by Rich Hall and produced by Sam Kerner, with music composed and performed by Rami Idris. Special effects by Fred Cole. Your announcer was Gary Goodwin. Won't you join us again when we present another exciting story for your entertainment? This is The Player, Paul Frees saying goodbye. Until next, we meet.